This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 11th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 355. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, for the first time in history, two men, England's Roger Bannister and Australia's John Landy, ran the mile in less than 4 minutes. They did it in Vancouver and they did it at the new Empire Stadium on August 7th, 1954. England's Roger Bannister defeated Australia's John Landy in what is known as the Miracle Mile at Empire Stadium on August 7th, 1954. 70 years later, on August 7th, 2024, I invited Jason Beck from the BC Sports Hall of Fame to go for a walk in their footsteps. Jason Beck is also the author of The Miracle Mile, Stories of the 1954 British Empire and Commonwealth Games. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
These are the British Empire and Commonwealth Games, and they're coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Play-by-play commentator Steve Douglas on August 7th, 1954 at the British Empire Games in Vancouver's Empire Stadium on CBUT Vancouver via YouTube. The July 30th to August 7th, 1954 games were the first live TV broadcast from CBUT on the national CBC network.
Right now, I'm recording as I'm sitting beside Empire Field on August 7th, 2024. Rewind 70 years to the day, August 7th, 1954, was the final day of the British Empire Games in Vancouver at Empire Stadium. The sporting world was focused on Vancouver. Here we are beside Empire Field, where Empire Stadium used to stand, on a sculpture called Home and Away. It's meant to emulate one of the sections at Empire Stadium. And actually sitting with me to my right on the Home and Away sculpture is Jason Beck, General Manager of the British Columbia Sports Hall of Fame and Museum, and the foremost authority on the history of the British Empire and Commonwealth Games from 1954, Vancouver's first mega event. We probably would never have had the Winter Olympics in 2010 if we never had the British Empire Games in 1954. Jason, tell me, what drew you to doing the research, doing the exhibits, doing the book about the British Empire Games?
Well, I always say the stories, they found me. I wasn't really looking for it. I'd been aware of the mile and Jim Peters and the marathon and the games themselves, but it just felt like all these stories kept finding me beyond the Miracle Mile, and I thought, wow, this was really varied, significant event for Vancouver, and there really wasn't one source that got into a lot of detail beyond maybe the mile and maybe the marathon. After a while, I just thought, well, these stories keep finding me. Maybe I should look at it, even though, you know, you were saying just a few moments ago, the last Lions game here is 82. The last Whitecaps game was 83. I was born in 82. You know, over 25 years after this event, and some young kid is looking at it. But maybe it was the right person, the right time, and I just... What, kind of like how we're sitting here right now overlooking it. I tried to, as I was researching and writing, tried to envision what it would have been like to sit there in the stands or be on the track while Bannister and Landy were running or while these events are happening, and try to share that experience with people by talking to those that were there. And it was an amazing 10-year journey, really. It's kind of fun to be looking back at it 10 years later now.
Yeah, the Whitecaps and Lions did come back to play 2011 in the temporary Empire Field setup while BC Place Stadium was under renovations. Empire Field still lives on as a place of sport and recreation, maybe not so much for spectators, but definitely for participants to help the future of Vancouver and British Columbia's sport history.
That's kind of fitting because in a lot of ways that event, the 54 games, and especially the Miracle Mile, put Vancouver on the map, and built sport here. A lot of things happened after 54. You know, we got the Lions in later that summer, and the Whitecaps about 20 years later, and the Canucks in the NHL 15-ish years later. It really elevated Vancouver. And so to see that, you know, here at the site, still it's kind of a sports center, and now it's grassroots. These kids are, and these players down on the field on the track below us, they're the next, you know, Bannisters and Landys, and in 15 or 20 years we'll be you know, reporting on them. So it's kind of cool. The site is still a source for sport here.
And the Home and Away sculpture that we're sitting on, for a number of reasons, including the pandemic and supply chain issues, they say, took much longer to build this one small portion than the entirety of Empire Stadium, which took over about 14 months or so to go from
very fast
from just an empty lot into a thriving stadium where the world was watching. How did Vancouver change from then to now?
I mean, it was much smaller, and the sports world was much smaller. You know, the biggest team in town was the Canucks, like it is today, but they were playing in a minor league, in the Western Hockey League, and sports were more local. You know, you saw a lot more coverage of local boxing and local basketball and local soccer, if you did go on to you know, compete at a national level or an international level, that was really significant. That didn't happen very often. We're with the Olympics on, we see all these great athletes right now from BC that are winning medals and doing well. We kind of take it for granted. That was really rare back in 54. There just wasn't the infrastructure. There wasn't the media coverage. It was just smaller in every way. But this event, it elevated everything. Suddenly the eyes of the world were on Vancouver. Hey, we could host a big event like this. And I think it also gave the city itself some confidence that, you know, we're not just like a little backwater. We're actually a world city.
Yeah, they called it the week that you'll remember for a lifetime. Started July 31st of 1954, wrapped up August 7th, 1954. It was a number of firsts in media, Sports Illustrated,
yeah.
TV.
Yeah, I mean, it put Vancouver on the map. People don't realize Sports Illustrated, the lead story was from here, from the Vancouver Empire Games, the first issue of Sports Illustrated. That was the first event broadcast live on television across North America on the CBC and NBC. 70 million people were watching that race on TV. There weren't as many options, so the audience wasn't splintered. You know, you kind of had two or three things to watch, but it put Vancouver on the map. Suddenly, that was a name people recognized. Oh, that's where the Miracle Mile took place. And you see it more and more as the years go on. Vancouver becomes more familiar and more recognizable as more big events, big athletes, big teams take place here.
And Empire Stadium in 1954 was, of course, the center for ceremonies and track and field. But where else did the games happen around the region?
They were all over the Vancouver, and actually even outside Vancouver. The rowing events took place on the Vetter Canal out in Chilliwack, which is really unique. But other venues, the other big venue was that built for the games was there were two of them actually. One was the Empire Pool over at UBC, which was the last venue to kind of survive. It was just torn down about 5 years ago. And then China Creek, the Cycle Bowl, was built over where Vancouver Community College is now. And then there was other repurposed facilities. Some of the P&E buildings were used for weightlifting and wrestling. The Lord Byng High School hosted fencing. So it was kind of all over the city, as well as out in Chilliwack.
What did the old-timers, the people who were participants, people who were in the press, people who were athletes at the time, what did they tell you about their 1954 memories of Vancouver and their 1954 memories of Empire Stadium?
Well, I think the thing about Vancouver is they talked about how the city came alive. It kind of reminded me, having lived through the 2010 Olympics, they talked about how everybody was excited and there was flags out. They decorated the city. It was a big deal. So that was kind of the big memory that everyone talked about. Everybody got behind these games in Vancouver. The games themselves, everybody kind of went to usually two memories. One was related to the mile, but even more powerful for most was watching Jim Peters, the great English marathoner, collapse in, on the track here at Empire Stadium just maybe half an hour after the mile took place. So you had this incredible high, watching this incredible race in the Miracle Mile, and then half an hour later, this huge tragedy, watching the greatest marathoner in history at that point collapse and fail to finish right on the track below them. It had to have been one of the most incredible afternoons in sport.
Yeah, that was a hot day, and they ran the marathon in the middle of the day. I understand there was also an issue there with the actual measurement of the marathon here in Vancouver.
Yeah, no, I that was a big controversy, and one of the things I was trying to solve in my research was the course too long, or was it the right length? So I literally walked the course. I was able to trace it on current maps. Most of the roads still exist, and I walked with a measuring wheel, and it was slightly over length. Not a lot, but maybe a few hundred meters, according to as closely as I could find. But I think, like you said, it was an extremely hot day. The course was also really hilly. That's what actually surprised me, is there was a lot of hills on this course. So on a hot day like that, that would definitely play a role. And the other thing that they changed after that race was the amount of water stations. They did have some water stations around the course, but they didn't have enough, and they weren't well staffed because everybody wanted to be in the stadium watching the mile, which was taking place at the same time. So a lot of the water and these sponges that were out were all dry. It had all evaporated. So a lot of the runners, even though they were stopping at a water station, they may not have gotten any water. So that played a role too.
Do you ever foresee Vancouver hosting another major outdoor summer multi-sport event? Or is it that the city's just gotten too big, there's no space?
Well, I'd hope something big would come back to the city. I thought it was going to happen with the 2030 bid. We're a sports city, and we're a sports province. We're seeing that at the Olympics, the amount of BC athletes that come from BC or train here. I hope it does come back. There's a lot of facilities here. Yeah, they'd probably have to build some new things, but you've got a lot of the big pieces in place. BC Place, with other stadiums like Swangard. It could happen. I'd love to see it. I agree with you that the Commonwealth Games has kind of stepped down a notch. A lot of people don't realize, but in 1954, the Olympics were still the more prominent games, but the difference, the step down from the Olympics to the Commonwealth Games at that time wasn't much. It was still a top, top international competition. Today, it's that you can't say the same, and it's definitely a big gap.
Well, let's go downstairs from Home and Away, down to ground level, down to track level, and retrace some of the footsteps of Bannister and Landy from August 7th, 1954, with Jason Beck from the BC Sports Hall of Fame. Before we go to the track, take a detour to the northeast corner of Empire Fields. There's a mural, a collage of photographs, archival photographs from the BC Sports Hall of Fame and Museum. Of various athletes, of course, Bannister and Landy, the iconic moment. But other photos here that people can find and come here any day they want, walk along here at any speed they want. Now, Jason, what do we see here from, I guess, right to left?
On the right, we've got a photo of the gold medal winning 4x110-yard relay team, the Canadian men's relay team. A couple of these guys were from Vancouver. It was the one individual gold, or in one track and field gold medal that Canada won on the track at the Vancouver Games. So great shot. And that was kind of the last event of the Games, even after the mile. So it kind of finished up the events at Empire Stadium with a big bang. To the next to the left, this was the biggest surprise of my research on my book. This is a photo of the Nigerian high jumper Emmanuel Ifejuna. He jumped with one bare foot and one shoed foot, as you can see in the photo here. He won the men's high jump, and then about 30 years later, he led a coup attempt in Nigeria, and eventually, which wasn't successful, but eventually he was actually executed, even though he was probably the first international gold medalist in any sport from an African country. There weren't a lot of African athletes competing internationally in the 50s, but he was one of the first great ones. So kind of an amazing story in 54, but then has a tragic ending later on. But that's a great photo of him competing in Vancouver. And of course, you got the famous Charlie Warner photo of the Miracle Mile, that famous moment on the last lap, last corner of the last lap, when John Landy looks over his inside shoulder to the left, and Roger just at the same moment timed his finishing kick and is just blowing by Landy on the right. Perfectly captured by Charlie Warner at the Vancouver Sun. Great photographer. Great photo. Probably the most famous sports photo in BC history. And then another great story on the far left, Marjorie Jackson Nelson. She was the fastest women sprinter in history. She was from Australia. She won all of her events in Vancouver and then retired. She retired in her early 20s. She'd probably go on to compete at another, two or three Olympics and Empire Games. But had a very brief career, but was the best sprinter in history at that point. Olympic champion, British Empire and Commonwealth Games champion, world record holder. And she ran her final race here in Vancouver on the track here at Empire Stadium.
So here we are on the track at Empire Field on August 7th, 2024, the 70th anniversary of August 7th, 1954, the last day of the British Empire and Commonwealth Games. The highlight was the Miracle Mile. Jason set the scene for all of us about that afternoon, that race, as we're on the track right now, as the race would be starting.
Well, you got to imagine there's over 35,000 people in the stadium around us. They don't even know how many people are in the stadium. People are sneaking in every which way they could. Everybody wanted to be here. 35,000 people, they're all anticipating this race. They've been talking about it, hyping it for weeks, if not months. And it's now going to happen. 8 men on the track. The two key ones, of course, are Roger Bannister from England, John Landy from Australia. But there were some other good runners in that race, too. Murray Hallberg from New Zealand, Rich Ferguson from Canada, Victor Milligan from Northern Ireland. So there were some contenders, some top milers. Everybody was expecting Landy to go out and lead from the front. That was his strategy. And that's what happened. That's how the race went to plan. It was whether Bannister would be able to unleash his feared finishing kick, which he was known for. So there was a question of the pacer versus the sprinter. You know, who would Bannister's finishing kick be killed off by Landy's hot pace? And essentially by the back straight, kind of where we're at right now on the first lap, Landy went into the lead. And there was at one point, maybe on the second or third lap, where Bannister said he'd almost lost contact with John. There was maybe like a 10 or 15 yard gap. And at that point, you really have to work to catch a runner. You're not getting any drafting benefit behind a runner. You're doing all the same work as the runner in front of you, cutting through the air. So he really had to dig deep, and there is a moment where he talked about how he was doubting whether he had enough to catch Landy, but he started to chip away and chip away and chip away, and eventually by the final lap, they were essentially within a yard or two of one another.
And here we are actually walking past the famed statue, the Charlie Warner photo-inspired statue.
So you can imagine somewhere on one of these maybe grassy hills here, Charlie took a spot near the final corner, because everybody else, all the other photographers, were at the finish line, and he wanted to get a different shot. So he was sat down in the grass, and he was just, every time the leaders came around the track, he had a speed graphic camera. He could do one shot per lap, and then he had to reload. And so he wasn't even sure what he was getting, but he noticed that Landy was looking over his shoulder earlier in the race, trying to see Bannister's shadow on the track. And so he thought, well, that might be an interesting shot. So he was trying to get a shot of that. Well, it just so happened, on this very corner where we are right now, he caught the photo of maybe the century.
Bannister is kicking very definitely. He's passing Landy. Landy looks the wrong way.
Yeah, that photo, which was turned into the sculpture. Talk about the sculpture itself.
The sculpture was made by Jack Harmon, famous sculptor in BC here. It was unveiled in 1967. It's a larger-than-life, depiction of that moment from Charlie's photo, when Bannister, passed on Landy's right as Landy looked the wrong way, and it's just a beautiful sculpture. I'm so glad to see it down here in kind of a historic spot where it took place.
Yeah, originally was installed on the south end of the Empire Stadium precinct. Then it was moved in the 1990s to Hastings and Renfrew, but moved back here when Empire Field was turned into the fine amateur sports location it is, mostly for soccer, but also for people with fitness, track and field. There's even someone actually playing lacrosse today.
Yeah.
So it's great to be here at Empire Field and talk with you. And we're just a little bit over 4 minutes.
Oh, we're no sub 4 minute mile for us today, Bob.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for joining me on the podcast, Jason Beck from the British Columbia Sports Hall of Fame and Museum. It's at BC Play Stadium. Tell the listeners how they can enjoy and learn about BC sports history.
Yeah, come down to the BC Sports Hall of Fame. We're open 6 days a week. Gate A of BC Place. Dozens of galleries, thousands of artifacts, our honored members, tons of stories. Come see stories of the Empire Games, the Miracle Mile, and others from 150 years of BC sport. Thanks again.
Thank you, Bob.
Dr. Roger Gilbert Bannister of England over John Michael Landy of Australia, 1-2. And Rich Ferguson of Canada was third. What else do you say? Well, I promise you, you'll go a long, long time before you see another event like that. With all the heart-stopping thrills that were involved in it, and Bannister's finishing kick, the one everybody worried about and wondered about, came through.
More sounds of play-by-play commentator Steve Douglas and the Miracle Mile, August 7th, 1954, at the British Empire Games in Vancouver on CBUT via YouTube. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Musk cans Costco Taiwan sale of Teslas. Tesla and Costco Taiwan kicked off a sales drive that was to last until August 18th. The models in display were the Model 3 and Model Y rear-wheel drive models. On Tuesday, ex-user Farzad shared a post announcing the promotion and suggested that Tesla would trial the sales channel before bringing it to the U.S. However, less than 20 minutes later, Musk wrote to Farzad's post, quote, "I just canned. The program was not approved," end quote. In the Kyoto news, U.S., European Union, aired concern over no Israel presence at Nagasaki A-bomb event. Multiple ambassadors pulled out of the event after Nagasaki refused to invite Israel in July. The envoys of Britain, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, the U.S., and the EU said it would, quote, result in placing Israel on the same level as countries such as Russia and Belarus, end quote, which have not been invited to the ceremony for a third consecutive year. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong residents warned to attend to personal safety in UK amid anti-immigrant riots. The warning came as more than 400 people were arrested and around 100 charged linked to the violent clashes across the UK that erupted after three young girls died in a mass stabbing in Southport. False rumors spread online that the suspect was a Muslim asylum seeker as far-right violence escalated across the country. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, 7th annual PDX Hot Sauce Expo unites brands and fans for the love of the pepper. More than 700 sauces from nearly four dozen companies from 20 states convene August 10th and 11th in Portland. The expo features Pucker Butt Pepper Company, famous for engineering the Carolina Reaper, which up to now has been the hottest pepper in the world. Pucker Butt's newest creation is Pepper X. Jalapeno peppers measure around 8,000 Scoville heat units. Carolina Reapers clock in at a whopping 2.2 million Scoville heat units. But Pepper X is said to measure an excruciating 2.69 million Scoville heat units. Ouch. In Crosscut, Washington governor's race narrows to Ferguson, Reichert. Democrat Bob Ferguson and Republican Dave Reichert are the frontrunners heading toward the general election in November. They beat Mark Mullett and Semi Byrd, respectively. Democrat Jay Inslee announced he would not seek a fourth term as governor. And in the Breaker.News, read these stories behind the headlines. Vancouver man accused in crypto phone crackdown appeals to French court for bail. And Vancouver's integrity commissioner throws out complaint by Mayor Sims' top aides. Read those stories and more in the Breaker.News.
That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
the firefighters and the neighbors in Dunbar who came to the aid of other neighbors on August 6th. That's when an explosion and fire destroyed the Dunbar 41 rental condo's construction site and a crane collapsed across 41st Avenue. It's a miracle that nobody was seriously injured.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 11th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 11th of August in 1929, Babe Ruth became the first baseball player to reach 500 career home runs? The Bambino hit the dinger for the Yankees at League Park in Cleveland. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow the Breaker News as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support the Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.